Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Jyotir-yatayvodakah pariveshi Jyotir-yatayvodakah pariveshta samira vigha nugatam vibhavyate evam samaya rachiteshvasau puman guneshu raga nugato vimuhyati. Continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna. This is text 43. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. On the way home from her wedding, Devaki, on the chariot, has been accosted by Kamsa. He grabbed her hair and is threatening to kill her because there was a prophecy that was spoken. It seemed to be from an unembodied voice, but it was the demigods trying to speed up the advent of Lord Krishna. And they said, Kamsa, you're a fool because you're driving the chariot of your sister and brother-in-law and the eighth son of your sister will kill you. So being a materialist, he immediately wanted to try to stop his supposed enemy by killing his sister and thereby preventing the pregnancy to take place at any time. And Vasudev, who is a Vaishnava with a cool head, began to dissuade him from doing this. And one of the tacks he took was to tell him that he'd lose his reputation. And now he's also explaining to him that you're not your body and that you're responsible for what you do, and you have to change from one body to the next. And according to your activities in one life, you'll be responsible in the next life. And he's giving him a perspective so that he can be detached from the bodily conception of life. So he's giving these examples about how the soul is different from the body. Purport. This verse gives a very good example by which to understand the different positions of the eternal spirit soul in the material world and how the soul takes on different bodies, dehantara prapti. The moon is stationary and is one. But when it is reflected in water or oil, it appears to take different shapes because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when put into the material modes of nature, it takes different bodies, sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, a dog, a tree, and so on. By the influence of Maya, the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity thinks that he is this person, that person, American, Indian, cat, dog, tree, or whatever. This is called Maya. When one is freed from this bewilderment and understands that the soul does not belong to any shape in this material world, one is situated on the spiritual platform, Brahmabhuta. This realization is sometimes explained as nirakar, or formlessness. This formlessness, however, does not mean that the soul has no form. The soul has form, but the external agitating form he has acquired because of material contamination is false. Similarly, God is also described as nirakar, which means that God has no material form but is Sakchidananda Vigraha. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Sakchidananda Vigraha, but his material forms are temporary or illusory. Both the living entity and the Supreme Lord have original spiritual forms, Sakchidananda Vigraha. But the Lord, the Supreme, does not change his form. The Lord appears as he is, whereas the living entity appears because material nature forces him to accept different forms. When the living entity receives these different forms, he identifies with them and not with his original spiritual form. As soon as the living entity returns to his original spiritual form and understanding, he immediately surrenders to the Supreme Form, the Personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Bahunam jamanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate. When the living entity, after many, many births in different forms, returns to his original form of Krishna consciousness, he immediately surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Form, Krishna. This is liberation. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18.54, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Surrender unto the Supreme Form is the result of bhakti. This bhakti, or understanding of one's own position, is the complete liberation. As long as one is under an impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth, he is not in pure knowledge, but must still struggle for pure knowledge. Klesho dikartaraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam. Bhagavad Gita 12.5. Although one may be spiritually advanced, if one is attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, one must still work very hard, as indicated by the words klesho dikartara, which mean greater suffering. A devotee, however, easily attains his original position as a spiritual form and understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original form. Krishna himself explains the forms of the living entities in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he clearly says to Arjuna that he, Arjuna, and all other living entities who were previously in their original forms are separate individual identities. They were individuals in the past, they are now situated in individuality. And in the future, they will all continue to maintain their individual forms. The only difference is that the conditioned living entity appears in various material forms, whereas Krishna appears in his original spiritual form. Unfortunately, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge think that Krishna is like one of them and that his form is like their material forms. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanumashutam. Bhagavad Gita 9.11. Krishna is never puffed up by material knowledge and is therefore called achuta, whereas the living entities fall down and are agitated by material nature. This is the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entities. What is the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entities? Achuta. Supreme Lord never falls down, and the living entity prone to fall down. Chuta. In this connection, it is to be noted that Vasudev, who is situated in a transcendental position, advised Kamsa not to commit further sinful activities. Kamsa, representative of the demons, was always ready to kill Krishna or God, whereas Vasudev represents a transcendentally situated person to whom Krishna is born. Vasudev is the son of Vasudev. Vasudev wanted his brother-in-law, Kamsa, to refrain from the sinful act of killing his sister, since the result of being agitated by material nature would be that Kamsa would have to accept a body in which to suffer again and again. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4, Rishabhadeva also says, Nasadu manye yata atmano yam asan apikleshada asadeha. As long as the living entity is entangled in the fruit of activities of so-called happiness and distress, he will receive a particular type of body in which to endure the three kinds of suffering due to material nature. I'm going to read that sentence again because of the particular word endure. As long as the living entity is entangled in the fruit of activities of so-called happiness and distress, he will receive a particular type of body in which to endure the three kinds of suffering due to material nature. Tri tapa yantrana. So you get a body so you can endure more suffering. Not very good. An intelligent person, therefore, must free himself from the influence of the three modes of material nature and receive his original spiritual body by engaging in the service of the Supreme Person, Krishna. As long as one is materially attached, one must accept the process of birth, death, old age, and disease. One is therefore advised that an intelligent person, instead of being entangled in so-called good and bad fruit of activities, should engage his life in advancing in Krishna consciousness, so that instead of accepting another material body, Chakva Deham Punarjanma Naiti, he will return home back to Godhead. Anything that stood out for you? Did you like to hear it? What did you like about it? One thing is that those who are experiencing this kind of by practice, especially who are concentrating on chanting Hare Krishna, experience this difference between the body and the self, and they get knowledge. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. When one serves Krishna, then he or she automatically, concomitantly gets knowledge and detachment. Knowledge means seeing the difference between the body and the self. And the process of chanting Hare Krishna, the Maha Mantra, concentrating the mind on the sound vibration, associating with Krishna through the vibration, means that we attain these kinds of realizations. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinshana sarvergunas tatra samasate sura. All the qualities of light come out of those who are engaged in devotional service. And that includes seeing the difference between the body and the self. And for somebody who's experiencing that this kind of information becomes more and more interesting. It's not that we advance in devotional service and then this kind of information about how I'm not my body becomes boring. I've heard that before. That's only the basics. On the contrary, to someone who's in the process of devotional service, this kind of information is interesting. I saw Satyadev Prabhu going for the microphone. So,
yeah, when I was listening to Vasudev speaking to Kamsa, how he's explaining so systematically. Maybe we could read the verse again. Can you just read the verse again?
Sure.
He's so systematically explaining how the living being becomes bewildered by the modes of nature through the mind.
When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature.
Yeah, I mean, this one verse is completely liberating. And as I was hearing this, I was thinking, where else could you hear this knowledge? We're hearing so much vibration during the day, so much news. Mostly it's fear-mongering, you know. It just produces agitation. And we were also reading the fifth chapter the other day, and Narada Muni said to Vyasadeva that unless you are speaking the pure truth, which is, you know, surrender to Krishna and bhakti, then whatever you hear is simply going to agitate the mind and cause bewilderment. But this transcendental sound vibration, if we actually hear it and then apply it, is our key to freedom out of the mode of ignorance and liberation, you know, back home, back to Godhead. And I was just, you know, appreciating how full of light it is and how it's all due to, you know, the living entity, you know, our free will. We have this ability to put our attention wherever we want to. When you think about it, you know, we can think about whatever we want. That's an awesome power, really. That no one can actually control what we put our attention on or what we decide we want to think about. And so at any moment, we can, if we're fortunate, you know, to hear this transcendental knowledge through the disciplic succession, we actually have the choice to put our attention on the self and on Krishna at any moment. And when we do that, then there's no more bewilderment. But as soon as we begin to focus on thoughts that are in the mind, which usually those thoughts are, always those thoughts are either about what was or what will be. So they're not real. They're not about reality. But we're focused upon them, as it's mentioned in here. And as soon as we focus upon them, they appear to be real, just like the moon, you know, when it's reflected in oil or on the water, appears to be moving. So when we're looking at our thoughts about the past or the future, we're thinking those thoughts are me, and they appear to be me, but it's actually the mode of ignorance affecting us. And that's another point here, is just this: the difference between us and Krishna is Krishna never falls down. Patanjali says that also. That Krishna never falls down, but we do fall down. We do become bewildered, and that's important for us to acknowledge and to admit. And the those who are impersonalists, somehow they miss this point that they have, you know, come under the influence of ignorance. They never ask this question, you know, how have I come under the influence of ignorance? If I'm God, how can I become bewildered? How does that happen? So when we admit that, then we're admitting there's a superior authority and we're not it. And that's the beginning of bhakti. So I was just thinking, just in these couple of verses, practically the whole philosophy of spiritual life is there. All knowledge is there, just in a couple of verses of the Bhagavatam. It's amazing. And where else can you get this?
See what I said? He's appreciating. Yeah?
Honda has got white color, J5JBB353 is blocking. The neighbor is honking.
That's the neighbor honking?
Yeah.
Okay, whose car is that?
Honda Accord White.
Honda Accord White. I was just going to say, tell him to stop honking. Just tell her to come in class. Okay, so I want to read a verse from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is there's several here. First, let's look at 619, which is on page 291. I'll say, please repeat. Yata dipo nivatasto.
Yata dipo nivatasto.
Nengate supamasmrita.
Nengate supamasmrita.
Yogino yata chitasya. Yunjato yoga matmanaha. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. Purport: a truly Krishna conscious person, always absorbed in transcendence, in constant undisturbed meditation on his worshipable Lord, is as steady as a lamp in a windless place. And now let's look at two verses on page 296 and 297. These are texts 625 and 626. I'll say, please repeat. Shanai shaner uparamed. Pudyadriti grihitaya atma samstam anakritva nakinchit apichintayet. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence sustained by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. All say, please repeat. Gradually, step by step.
Gradually.
One should become situated in trance.
One should become situated in trance.
by means of intelligence,
by means of intelligence,
sustained by full conviction,
sustained by full conviction,
and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone,
and should think of nothing else.
Purport: by proper conviction and intelligence, one should gradually cease sense activities. This is called pratyahara. The mind being controlled by conviction, meditation, and cessation from the senses should be situated in trance or samadhi. At that time, there is no longer any danger of becoming engaged in the material conception of life. In other words, although one is involved with matter, as long as the material body exists, one should not think about sense gratification. One should think of no pleasure aside from the pleasure of the Supreme Self. This state is easily attained by directly practicing Krishna consciousness. So, first of all, the words gradually, step by step. There is a way in which, as we practice regularly, we'll become stronger and more accustomed to seeing the difference between the body, the self, the mind, the intelligence, and we should become situated in trance by means of intelligence. So in the third chapter, near the end, Krishna says, first he mentions the hierarchy, that above the senses of the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. And then he says, evam buddhi param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatra mahabaho kamarupa durasadam, that by controlling the lower self by the higher self, that is using our intelligence, our purified intelligence, to control the lower self, then we can become, we can rise above lust. And that's what is being mentioned here. In the last part of the purport, Prabhupada says that one should not think about sense gratification. Why shouldn't one think about sense gratification? What's wrong with it? It's a good thing. It's beautiful. Right? What's wrong with it? It's temporary? A lot of things are temporary, but they're beautiful. Why shouldn't we enjoy them? We go to Japan every year, and there's a cherry blossom festival. Everyone sits under the cherry blossoms for a week, and then they all blow away, and it's a beautiful thing. What's wrong with being temporary? Sense gratification. Whoa, there's a lot of answers here. Okay, take a microphone if you can answer. Here, pass one over here to quadrant two or three. Okay, go ahead.
Because all the sense gratification will end up in misery.
Initially, how do you know?
Huh?
How do you know that?
Because Krishna said that.
And how else do you know?
We can also know by practical experience.
That helps, doesn't it? When Krishna says it and then you have practical experience of it, this is by intelligence, and he mentions here, he says, intelligence sustained by full conviction. So there's a verse in the 11th canto where Krishna says, Shruti pratyaksham aityam anumanam chatushpadam. He mentions four kinds of evidence by which pramane svanavastanad vikalpat savirajite. You should use these four kinds of evidence, he says, to become convinced that this material world is unstable, and therefore you should become detached from it. So what are the four kinds of evidence? Direct perception, shruti, hearing. You hear from the Shastra, Krishna says, and you have faith in the Shastra, and then shruti pratyaksham, then you have direct experience for yourself. Aitya means traditional wisdom. People pass down all the time. You can just listen to any song. I can't get no satisfaction. Or pick any song. I haven't listened to songs for a long time, but I bet if we picked one out from anywhere, it would say the same thing as people have been saying for years in poetry and in song, and that is that there's a frustration in the material world, and that sense gratification leads to misery. There are plays, there are stories, and all kinds of things like that. So ITM, Shruti Pratyaksham Anuman, which means you also deduce for yourself what's going on. You had another point? The microphone went back there.
No, Prabhu, it is pretty much what Prabhuji said. It's associated with misery because it has a beginning and it has an end.
Okay. Well, that's what Krishna says, isn't it? He says intelligent persons don't take pleasure in the sources of misery. This is material sense gratification because they have a beginning and end. He actually says they're the wombs of misery. That's where misery is born, in that temporary sense gratification. From that, you get some byproduct that is not very nice. So if one understands that and short-circuits the process of sense gratification by seeing through intelligence, intelligence can discriminate and choose. The mind's accepting, rejecting, and the intelligence can override and say, I've understood through Shastra, I've understood through direct perception, through traditional wisdom, through logical deduction, that this isn't in my best interest, and therefore he stays away from sense gratification. And in the next verse, text 26, I'll say, please repeat. Yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam astiram tatastato niyam yaitad atmanyeva vasham nayet. I'll say, please repeat. From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Purport, the nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. What a statement. Let's hear that again. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. Have you had ever this experience that the mind has controlled you? Yes. When did you have that experience? Can you remember? You wanted to go one way, your mind wanted to go the other way, and your mind won. Do you have an experience of that?
Yeah.
Yes?
While chanting.
Well, Chen, did you have a specific experience? Quadrant one microphone should be here.
While chanting, I want to focus on more holy name, but mind doesn't control and it takes me to the unnecessary thoughts.
Like where? Where does the mind go, for instance? Any examples?
What I will do today's job, or like, you know, unnecessary future planning, or kind of yesterday past bad experience or something, and the friends. Like so many unnecessary thoughts which we don't want to focus on the early morning especially, and still it's come in the mind.
So instead of being a human being, you're a human doing. Your mind wants to do right. All the time, right?
Right.
Instead of just being Sat-Chit-Ananda. So you have to do this. Okay, so this is a really good point you're making, that during chanting japa, that the mind tends to go off in other places. Is it just during japa that the mind tends to go off in other places, or is that we notice it when we're chanting japa more? What do you think? We notice it. Why do we notice it? Because we're controlling the mind, right? We're actually practicing this, what Krishna is saying here, yato yato nishchalati. Wherever it wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. Isn't that interesting phraseology? Under the control of the self. The mind has a mind of its own, so to speak. It goes off wherever it wants to go. It becomes wild and unconditioned. Arjuna said it. He said, chanchalam himana krishna pramati balavadridam. It's chanchal. And we can observe this and understand how the mechanics of the mind work if we focus when we're chanting japa, as an example. I'm chanting, and then I'll notice that my mind jumped wildly from one place to the next. This is chanchal, right? So what else is it? Chanchala himana krishna pramati, and it's mad. Mad means crazy. Can you think of an instant when your mind was crazy? Like, you look at it like, what are you talking about? Why are you thinking of that? Some madness? Or is it just me? The mind's mad? It's crazy, right? Is it?
Yes.
Any experience of that?
Yeah, good morning, you know.
driving and one person was going in a car a little bit and he was so mad that how come you come before me even though there are space, but he was like honking and for at least 10 minutes everybody was looking what happened. He said, why you came? It's like so madness, people are not even allowing others to just give a little space on their own freeways, everybody, but he's thinking it's my space.
Yeah, the mind can become just blow things out of proportion. I remember my neighbors, God bless them, they're still there, wonderful neighbors, they're moving, unfortunately, but they were putting in a new fence that divides our property between my property and their property. And we decided where we were going to put the fence and everything, just replace the fence. And then I went away for vacation and I came back and the fence was down, but it was way far, way far in on my property. And of course, you know, my mind, you know, that 2 feet of dirt that they took off, which encroached on the property, my mind was so agitated because I thought, why could they possibly, while I was away, they moved the fence in towards, and this sort of, the mind becomes irritated, you know, that, you know, how could they move the fence that like that? So the mind at any time can go off and take things out of proportion, right? And become mad. Pramati balavad, and is it strong?
Yes.
How strong is it? We've seen people who try to control the mind, like addictions. We were talking about the other night, addiction. The mind becomes attached to a certain kind of pleasure or an impression. Actually, there's a mechanics behind this. When there's an experience of pleasure in the mind and the senses, then there's a tendency, it goes back and the mind wants to enjoy it again. Even if you say no, the intelligence says no. Like lots of people try to quit smoking. It's very hard to overcome smoking. They'll smoke for some time, they become addicted to it, and then they say it's bad for me. All the evidence is there. I don't want to smoke anymore. I'm losing friends. Everything bad is happening. But still, the mind, the senses, they come back and say, do it again. You have to. Balavad, it's very strong. And then you're forced to do it. Victimized, actually. Victimized by the senses. This verse, kamadinam katina katita palita durnideshas. The devotee is saying that the senses are bad masters. Anybody ever have a bad master? Where? At work? Get a bad master? And then that's a horrible situation. You have to do what they say, and they're a bad master. So I'm living with a bad master, with the mind, if it's uncontrolled. And if it's got a wrong impression, it's telling me the wrong things to do. And it's very strong. And dridham means it's very determined. So this yato yato nischalati, one has to, from wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. And this chanting japa is a good time to take shelter, because not only do we have the benefit of remembering this hierarchy and that our self is higher than even the intelligence and taking shelter there, but Krishna is in his holy name. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuto Nitya Mukto Binadvam Nami Namino, which means that Krishna and his name are identical. And Krishna is all powerful. He's completely sentient. He knows everything. He can help us. He's merciful, right? So we also have the benefit. Vrindai Tulside Bhai Priya Keshavasya Vishnu Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavatjai Namo Namaha Jai Vrindadevi Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. We also have the benefit that when we're chanting the holy name and concentrating, bringing our mind back to the holy name, that Krishna is also assisting us in controlling the mind, because he's Hrishikesh, he's the master of the senses, the master of the mind. So he can assist us in that way. So this kind of practice is very beneficial. In fact, someone told me the other day when we were talking about chanting japa, she said that when I finish all my rounds and I do good japa, then it's much easier to control all my other senses all day long. Anybody have this experience? If you start the day off by controlling the mind and doing japa and hearing the holy name, associating with Krishna and his holy name, then she said everything else becomes easier. Controlling the senses, making correct decisions, and so on. So this, what we're hearing, this theoretical knowledge, it can be applied, actually. We're meant to apply it in yoga. And specifically the process of chanting the mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and bringing our mind back, as the instructions Krishna is giving here imply, we should bring our mind back to wherever it was, wherever it goes, and it will go, to the control of the self, and put it under the control of the holy name, over and over again. Continuing the purport. One who controls the mind, and therefore the senses as well, is called Goswami, or Swami. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas, or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Hrishikesh, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. So Vasudeva is continuing. Tasmat na kaschit droham acharit sa tata vidaha atmana shemam anvichan drogdur vai parato bhayam. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. Purport. Instead of being inimical toward other living entities, one should act piously by engaging the service of the Supreme Lord, thus avoiding a fearful situation both in this life and in the next. In this regard, the following moral instruction by the great politician Chanika Pandit is very meaningful. Tyaja durjana sargam bhaja saru samagamam kuru punyam ato ratram smara nityam anityatam. One should give up the company of devils, demons, and non-devotees, and should always associate with devotees and saintly persons. One should always act piously, thinking that this life is temporary and not be attached to temporary happiness and distress. The Krishna consciousness movement is teaching all of human society this principle of becoming Krishna conscious and thus solving the problems of life forever. Tyakvadeham punarjanmai naitimam eti sorjana. What did you hear? Do you remember the verse? No, the verse from the Bhagavatam I just read. Should I read it again? Good to hear it again, right? This is 44. 10.144. This is good instruction. We'll take it in a very practical way once we hear this, okay? Are you ready? Yato yato nishchalati. Wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. Can we have the dictionary, please? We'll look up envy, where it comes from. What about envy of other living entities? It's called jiva himsa, or violence to other living entities, envy of other living entities. Any experience? Any realization? Envy of other living entities? Yes, Ramananda.
No, this is envy about the living entities, but if we know that everything is played by the modes of material nature, and everything is acted under the direction of Krishna's different energies, and the soul is simply is kind of riding a particular character, then what's the point in envying others or blaming others for something that the apparent that we think apparent we are suffering, but actually the body is suffering. We just have to watch this as a character in the movie. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel.
So there's a verse like that. Yes. Microphone. Are there three microphones in here? Two. Where's the third one? Really? That's a shame.
I mean, I take this opportunity to say that after the please don't keep the microphones in a place where we cannot notice it. Because if we notice it, we cannot find the microphone. They all have to be placed in a place where we can see, such as sofas or the shelf over there. Don't just keep it in some hiding. We cannot see it. And
when you just have one box, a microphone box, and all the microphones always go in the box. Otherwise, you get electrocuted when you walk out the door.
We do have a box, but that's where we keep all the microphones. But prior to keeping it in the box, we have to find the microphone first, and that is a problem.
I think what we can say, Ramanand Sakaprabhu, is the musical instruments as well as this, everybody should keep it there, and then at the end of the program, you can.
I mean, I initially gave a directive that everyone should keep all the microphones over there in the shelf, people in general are not doing it.
Well, that's because if you do something initially, you have to keep saying it over and over again. Any mission you have has to be repeated. The Bible says this. Unless you put your mission in front of people regularly, they go off in a different direction. Even Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita, that yoga nashta parantapa. He had this disciplic succession, now it's broken. Everyone's running off in a different direction, so we're speaking it again. So if you want to have a clear line, you have to tell people a mantra. The thing goes in the box. The thing goes on the shelf. Just announce it over and over again. And after a while, it becomes second nature habit. Is that all right? Okay. Envy. Do we want to know what envy is? Okay. Envy, envy, envy. Envy, a feeling of discontent and resentment aroused by another's desirable possessions or qualities. Ouch. Accompanied by a strong desire to have them for oneself. You want to hear it again? Can you handle it? Okay. A feeling of discontent and resentment aroused by another's desirable possessions or qualities, accompanied by a strong desire to have them for oneself. Discontent. There's discontent in envy. In other words, I see somebody else has something nice and I feel uncomfortable because I want it for myself. Envy. How come you're smiling, Shailesh? Take the microphone. This is going to be good.
I mean, it's at least it happens always to me, someone is at work and, has some good work and I don't have work. I say, wow, I don't have work, He's doing some good work, something when I was a kid, like something to play for, like a cricket bat or something, I don't have that cricket bat, It's like always happens,
Always happens. I was looking for the Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Is it there? The Gitavali? Or if it's not, actually, I can use the songbook, but I'm not seeing it. It should be there. Plus, it's weird because we're missing a Chaitanya Charitamrita, 12th chapter of the Madhya Lila, and there's a lot of other books in here. It's looking a little funny, this bookshelf. I'm going to read you from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. In one of the lectures in Mayapur, from the Vyasasan, one of the devotees explained the difference between envy and jealousy, and he put in a very simple manner. He said, envy is somebody is having something and you feel that he's not entitled to it, only I am entitled to it. Whereas jealousy is somebody is having it and you feel you should also have it. This is the way he explained it. Mm-hmm. And Duryodhana is a very good example of envy, not jealousy really, because he felt that only he should have and the Pandava shouldn't have anything. So that was a simple way in which they explained the difference between envy and jealousy.
Thank you. Here's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Amar Jivan. My life is always engaged in sinful activities without a trace of pious activities. Thank you. I am always inclined to give great anxiety and trouble to other living entities. For my personal sense gratification, I never reject any kind of sinful activity. I'm not at all merciful, and I see only to my personal interest. When others are suffering, I become very happy, and I am always speaking lies. And if someone is suffering, that is very pleasant to me.